Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Well, I should be riding. I should be working on my
It is I should be writing number 554, I think. Season 17, episode 3. And it's Tuesday. What other numbers can I throw at you? It's Tuesday the 11th, maybe? Not sure. Yes, I am totally with it and up to date. Yeah, I've been still recovering. It's one of the worst things about something throwing you off your schedule is, well, tomorrow when you realize you have work to catch up on, but there was other work to do tomorrow. So you have to work on the work that's slightly late while making other work late, or work on the work that's due that day and make the first work later. So dealing with migraine and stress about the country and the everything has been like, I finally got my scripts turned in yesterday. That was a big relief. Finally got the computer taken up, the computer built, and I'm saying that like I did something. My husband wanted to build it, so I bought all the pieces, and sorry about that. I bought all the pieces and he built it. And it's the 12th, but who's counting? Thank you, Rob Hines. The computer's set up. I need to be able to see inside of it. Apparently there's an NVIDIA bug that's screwing with me. Thanks, NVIDIA. Okay, so sorry I missed yesterday as well. Hello, Sario. Hello, Anne. Good to see y'all. This is the Writing Podcast. Yesterday, I did not make my AMA because I had an unexpected appointment pop up and had to run out and do that, unfortunately. And then I had to come home and write and finish that project. Sounding like the new year's all full of excuses already. Isn't that great? Cro-Mag! Hello, good to see you. So I hope people are doing well. It's been a stressful week. Very stressful week. If you're in D.C. or really any of the nation's state capitals, I hope you're staying safe. It doesn't look like it's going to be an easy week coming up. And that's distracting to us all. But we already talked about that last week. If you're new or you're just picking this up now, I do have an episode called Turn It Off, where we talk about how writers deal with the kind of distractions that come up. Sean Shonicky, ahoy. I'm glad you liked Six Wakes. Thank you. Interestingly enough, I was wanting to talk about this month, but now it seems more relevant than ever. And that's the weaponization of language. It's a very clever thing, and it's not something I feel I'm very good at. And so it always surprises me when it works. But I've talked about it a little bit before, about how the word you use to describe somebody, while they can be accurate, a lot of times they're chosen very carefully to elicit an emotional response in people. Mother elicits a response in people. Mother of more than one child, like mother of four dies. Oh no, it's so much worse than any other person. Kind of that's what it brings across. It's more that they put on more words to describe people, and it's not done with malice a lot of times. It's just that's what they use to describe certain people, but you won't find like other people described like that if they don't want to or don't think that they elicit such sympathies. But right now, especially with the riots in the Capitol last week, that's all about weaponized language. You can say violence is bad and then say a whole bunch of other sentences that tell people, no, violence is pretty okay. And the best part is you've got plausible deniability because you are quoted as to saying violence is bad. But people know. If you want to learn a lot about weaponized language, a lot of politicians use it. And yeah, I'll say it, the person currently in charge of the country, although he's done nothing but whine and deny and foment insurrection for the past couple of months, it's all about hidden messages and not even like clever hidden messages. Oh, well, maybe those Second Amendment people will take care of that. Second Amendment people have guns, and how do people get with guns take care of things? I mean, it just stuff like that. And you can learn a lot. That person is a very, very good manipulator of people. And he does it with language. And I think perhaps, maybe later, hello Under Pope, good to see you. Maybe later it won't be so raw to study certain languages done by certain words or phrases said by politicians. But it helps build character in stories. I mean, you take a white person with a gun and you call them a patriot. You take a black person with a gun and you call them a criminal and thug. That's weaponized language right there. And honestly, this was what I was going to talk about. I just didn't expect it to be so raw. It's scary. To be able to say, to have somebody say, don't do violence, and then everything else in the sentence says, go ahead and do some violence. It's very frustrating. Hi, Tish. Good to see you. I noticed it was a case of controlling the narrative, says Cro-Mag. Yeah. There's a lot of controlling the narrative going on. There's a lot of, he never said go attack the Capitol. So he's okay. They just decided to. heartbreaking seeing, being brown skin and seeing the justice in our country. Tish, I can't even imagine. My heart goes out to you. And I hope you're remaining safe in the next 2 weeks. Well, all the time, but really, things look like they're going to get worse before they get better. So I hope everybody stays safe. But like it or not, it is, when you see it in every day, it's awful, but it is, it's very clever manipulation of language, which is what we're trying to learn. At least I am. And I'm not saying it's good. I feel like I'm digging a hole for myself here. It's more, you can learn by studying people. Passive voice is considered terrible, except that politicians use it all the time because it points no blame. Mistakes were made. That bill was signed. That regiment opened fire. I mean, no, that's active. The small village was fired upon. That's it. Subject, then verb. That's a passive voice. So, even as, I don't know, guys. I don't know. I'm trying to say things and I'm judging myself for saying them as I'm saying them. It's more like, if there's nothing else to do right now, see what you can learn from the way different people weaponize language. Keep your eyes open and see if you can parse what they're saying. For one thing, it'll help you be more aware. And secondly, it'll help you learn. You can make more believable, absolutely wretched, amoral characters that way. Anne says, from what I've heard, the government uses all the time, too. I spoke to a woman who writes for the government, and she had to use it. I meant to say, I spoke to the woman who writes for the government. Oh, no, I thought you were changing from active to passive voice. Sorry, no, you were just... Yeah, I got you, Anne. I understood. Yeah, they have to. There's no pointing fingers unless you really want to point fingers, which also happens. And hey, y'all probably don't want to hear about politics, and I don't want to talk about it, but it is relevant right now. I'm pouring tea. That's why I'm leaning out of the shot. It's unfortunately relevant. And how politicians use language, how doctors use language, they're finding it in a lot of studies, especially when it comes to, like, mostly people with brown skin. Doctors, they've done studies to show that doctors just don't believe they hurt as much as white people do. And if you asked a doctor that, of course they would deny it, but that's not how people are acting. And it's very tragic thing, but it's also a way people use nothing is like by the rules A, B, and C, because they're going to look at a patient and they're going to say, they're going to make all the decisions based on the patient's race, perceived gender, age, class, and they're going to make decisions based on medical history and those things. And I'm talking about this because I actually, it's hard for me to write. I feel like characterization is something I struggle with. And in studying things like this, things like the way some people think, even, like sociopaths. I've got the book, The Sociopath Next Door, which was truly horrible. Because, I mean, she describes a lot of sociopaths that she studied. just to learn about that point, that characterization. And I did put a sociopath in a recent book, so I'm hoping that's that made that character appropriate. Sario, I have tea. I thought I took a drink. I saw you. I didn't acknowledge that you said hydrate, but I thought I did take a sip of tea. Then again, maybe I just picked it up and held it in my hands. I don't know. It's been a long day. But it's just green tea, so it's hydrating technically. Sometimes it's hard studying how people think. I've said time and again that at least old Stephen King is, with all of its flaws, a really good look at characterization. And I started rereading It this week. And just how he opens it with an act of violence, but then, or a couple of acts of violence, but then he starts introducing all of our adult characters, and there are six, I think? Well, there's seven, and one of them kills himself in an early chapter. But we get the story of every single of those heroic kids as an adult and being contacted by the one who stayed behind. If you don't know the story of It, it's about a scary killer clown, but really it's the concept is every 27 years or so, a monster below this town sort of awakens, kills a bunch of people in horrifying ways, and then goes back to sleep. So the kids fought it 27 years ago, and now they're all 38, living their lives, and have actually forgotten about that time. But the one who stayed behind calls them up and says, hey, it's starting again. We got to do something. And so it starts out with the description of how each of those people, who they grew up to be, and how they react to the phone call. And I'm getting detailed descriptions of the hypochondriac and his overbearing wife. Stephen King had a problem with fat phobia, not gonna lie. If that bothers you, wouldn't recommend his early stuff. I don't know if he's grown out of it, but if a woman was fat, she was dominating, overbearing, and pretty evil, or incredibly weak. But never good. No, there's no good fat women in Stephen King's books, but so you've got the hypochondriac and the dominating, weeping wife. And then you've got the brilliant yet weak one girl of the group who grew up to marry an abuser just like her father. And so there's just, it's all from his point of view, the abuser, which is another one of those things where you got to learn how to write people like that. And King does really well. It's awful. But it's awful because it works. It gets that emotional response for me. And I struggled a little bit with writing people of a lot of faith, which I tried to do in Six Wakes. But getting into the points, like the first person point of view of somebody truly evil is something I still struggle with a little bit. Which I suppose should help me sleep better at night, but really it makes me feel weaker as a writer, which is why, even though bad stuff's happening right now, I still say you can keep your eyes open and learn to better form your wretched, wretched, evil characters. Because, you know, evil's not ha-ha-ha, rubbing your hands together, cackling laugh. It's, well, we're seeing a lot of it these days. And that's how it really manifests. Oh, Twitch jittered right when you redeemed Hydrate and wasn't sure it went through. Yes, it did. I'll even do it again. So yeah, I always like to go back to Stephen King when I talk about characterization. My go-to ensemble characterization is, I say Sex and the City and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but I think I need to start adding Brooklyn Nine-Nine to that list. Anne says, whether or not you like Christian fiction, I highly recommend the If I Run series by Terry Blackstock, because in the second and third book, she writes the villain's POV in first person so well. Interesting. Thank you for the recommendation. Okay, If I Run by Terry Blackstock. But a lot of the characters in Brooklyn Nine-Nine are many faceted. And any comedian who whines that they're not allowed to make fun of women or people of color or non-straight people, and everyone's just too politically correct and you can't make jokes anymore, watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, because they don't make any of those jokes. And they've got two gay people and two regular black men, I mean regular characters, and two Latinas. You know, it's a very diverse cast, and none of them falls into a stereotype. Even the like the muscle bound, what is Terry, Sergeant? I think he is. He's played by Terry Crews, ex-NFL guy. Big muscle-bound sergeant, but he's absolutely dedicated to his wife. He's very, very much a dad to his girls. There is the scene where he's trying to put together the Princess Palace and losing his temper, but it's not that he's putting together a girly thing. It's just he doesn't know how to put it together and he's losing it. But he's not ashamed of being with the Princess Palace. And, you know, the chief is gay, but not any sort of stereotype played for laughs that you would ever find. There's a scene where I actually appreciated the fact that the chief started the African American. It's a very long acronym. African American Gay and Lesbian Police Association, I think, and they shorten it to AGLINICPA. But he started the group, and somebody was going to run against him. And so there's this very young, attractive man coming to his office saying, I really admire what you've done here, sir. I just want to let you know I'm going to be running against you because I think I could take the group in a new, wonderful direction. And in any, like, 1990s comedy, that would be played for sexual attraction. But no, not at all. It's not even mentioned. And those are the kind of things that, you know, he does so much. There's so much to laugh about in that episode that have nothing to do with the fact that these are gay black cops. Except for the acronym, which is just funny because it's a really long acronym. And it doesn't really make sense when you say it out loud. And that's as far as it goes. But I think a lot of times when people say they have trouble with pacing or characterization or plot, a lot of things you need to do is just read more and even watch more TV. I know everyone says throw out your television, but there's some really good storytelling going on in television, and there's some really good characters that are multifaceted in TV right now. I've been listening to the Office Ladies podcast by two of the women who worked on The Office, Jenna Fisher, who played Pam, and Angela, who played Angela. I can't remember which one is her real last name, but her first name's Angela and the character's first name's Angela. Anyway, and them talking about is getting me interested in watching The Office again, because that was also an ensemble. There's a lot of things about people that I think some writers create rules for their characters, and it's almost never stated outright. But, like, Dwight Schrute is a lover of authority. And it is pointed out a couple of times later on in the season, series, but Dwight, I mean, he's funny, he's obsessive, he's a complete nerd, he's naive, but he's also a complete lover of authority. And if he respects you as an authority figure, then he will listen to you even if he hates everything you're saying. There's every time Jim actually pulled rank on him, he stopped doing whatever he was doing. He didn't like it, but he did, because it's like you realize this man respects authority, and that's what they wrote into his character. And I think little rules like that can help. And I started out talking about the weaponization of language, and then I devolved into my own flaws of my own characters. So that happened. But really, it's all about a lot of things. People have a lot of layers. And a good character has a lot of layers, but they will have a couple of those rules, personal rules. And the audience, even if they could not articulate what a character's inner rules are, you know when they're broken. I'm going to spoil Babylon 5. It's been over for a long time. I hope you don't mind, but there's a character who's an assistant to a diplomat, and he falls in love with her, and she's in love with somebody else who she eventually marries. And at one point, there's an accident, and her husband, or I don't know if they're married at the time, but her intended, the man she loves, is caught behind an emergency door, and depressurization or something is happening. And he stands there for a minute, the assistant, and he runs away. And then he thinks better of it, and he runs back, and he rescues the guy, blah, blah, blah. But everybody watching said, no, that is not, there's nothing in him that's as opportunistic as to let her husband die for his own possible gain. And I wouldn't have told you, like, I could say what Lanier's personal rules were, but that definitely broke one of them. Hey, Kay Kimmy, good to see you. Sario says those comedians who are just talentless hacks. Yeah, they lean on the easy, stereotypical humor. That's just what they do. And suddenly people call them on it. Or I think it had a lot to do with the internet, because people hear those jokes and they think, well, that makes me kind of uncomfortable, but everyone else is laughing, so I'm not going to speak up. But then you got on the internet and you found out that there were a lot of other people who were sitting there feeling very uncomfortable too, so it's not like all of a sudden people are angry at this kind of humor. It's just a lot of us found out that a lot of other people didn't find it as funny as they thought we did. So I think, actually, I'm like spitballing here. I'm coming up with my own plans. I think I'm going to try to come up with those internal rules for some of my characters and see if that helps me build them. What are the values of the character? What do they hold sacred? Dwight Schrute holds authority sacred. I'd say Lanier, the guy in love with his boss that I was talking about earlier, I'd say he holds loyalty sacred? Loyalty and tradition. Sario says it's easier to speak out behind the safety of a keyboard. That's true. For better or for worse, Sario, that is definitely true. I'm sorry, it looks like my computer's not plugged in and I don't understand why. Oh well, it's still got plenty of power. I'll worry about that later. Having enough computer problems these days. But how are you doing? I didn't actually do my word count because I was writing a script, and Final Draft doesn't tell you word count, they tell you page count. But I have been doing a lot of writing, I'm just not sure how much lately. Got that turned in, feel good, now I'm behind on another project. Yay! But, I mentioned before I was taking a goals course for the new year and had our second meeting today, which is why I've kind of moved, at least for now, I've moved the Tuesday I should be writings to the afternoon because my midday is taken up by this class. And, I'm definitely not going to tell you what I learned in the class in a way that will reproduce it and therefore negate what this woman has built. But I did come up with some goals today that some of them I had articulated before and just never knew how to make myself. It's like they tell you, make the 1 year goal, and then what do you need to do by 6 months to get this? And what do you need to do by 3 months? And break it down and break it down. And it all makes sense until you find out what you have to do tomorrow. And I'm like, I'm already busy tomorrow. How am I going to fit this 1 year goal into tomorrow? I know it's just a little bit, but where do I put it? Which is where most of my goals fall down. But that is supposed to be discussed in this class as well. So some of my goals, like, I know not to say, I want to be a runner. I have to say, I want my goal to be run a 10K by the end of the year kind of thing. But actually making myself get out and run, that's the challenge. But I came up with a couple of other goals, health related, because I really never want to let that go. I never want to put that on the back burner because I think it's really dangerous. I mean, I'm in my late 40s now. Putting health on the back burner is not really a good idea. But I came up with writing goals, and I came up with, well, I called it microphone because it's streaming and podcasting goals. So I'm hoping I can get, you know, I'm hoping I'll have a good plan. The class is over in March, early March. So we'll see. But I did learn one thing that was fascinating, and that is one of my problems has been I'm a writer. I'm writing books and I'm getting paid for it. And so I was wondered, like, how do I make professional goals? Because that's, I mean, the goal is write book, finish book, sell book, write another book. But answer your question in a minute, Billy Boy. But then I realized that since I'm already contracted to do some stuff, that stuff's going to get done. And if it doesn't get done, I've got bigger problems. So the next book on my contract is not a goal. My next round of edits is not a goal. Writing a book in a genre that I don't write in that's not sold, that's a goal, because that requires discipline and ambition and planning to get that done. It's and you know, I know this show is for more beginner types, and if you don't already have a contract, then yeah, maybe write that novel to sell is your goal. But it's really, that novel's in the same place as mine is, because I'm talking about writing in a genre I'm not used to, and writing a novel on spec when I could be writing other things, and that's going to take discipline and planning. So whereas beginning writers could say, write that book by the end of the year, or query 10 agents by the end of the year kind of thing. I think that already helped me solidify some of the goals I have in my writing life. So that was cool. Bill asked, if an author has internal rules for their characters, wouldn't that hamper a writer who's a pantser? I don't think so. Not at all. Because, I mean, you need to have an idea of your character's personality when you're writing them. If they manifest stuff in their personality as you're writing them, then you can, you know, fix that on edits. But really, when a question comes up, would this, if someone's rude to this person, and I know that this person respects authority, how are they going to react? So if the CEO yells at Dwight Schrute, he will take it meekly because he respects authority above all other things. Whereas if the CEO yells at somebody else, then somebody else will react in a different way. This is why one of my favorite writing exercises is put all your characters at a table where a waiter drops a glass of ice water on them. And they should all react differently as per their personalities. Will they get angry? Will they think to get the person fired? Will they apologize? Will they help clean up? Will they just get silent and furious and walk out? I mean, there's so many other ways that different personality types will react to this sudden and startling feeling. Hey, thanks for subscribing, Tish. Really appreciate it. Okay, Kimmy says, my aunt's funeral was today, but I couldn't go, and there was a skunk right by our backyard, so that's how I am. I am so sorry. I'm laughing at the skunk, not the funeral. Oh, that's awful. Was it just the skunk, or was it the skunk actually spraying? Because, you know, skunks, as long as you don't bother them, hopefully they won't bother you, except for when they spray somebody else and then they're, it's, you can smell it for miles. But I am very sorry for your day, Kay Kimmy. I really am. But yeah, even if you're a pantser, you should know a little bit about your character's personality. And sometimes when a decision comes up, you need to wonder, my person thinks motherhood is sacred. How does that factor into what they just did? Let's say they have a hot temper, but they think motherhood is sacred, and the waitress that dumped ice water on them is pregnant. Are they going to act differently than if it was just a single man? Probably. It was a pretty strong skunk smell, but thankfully doesn't seem to have sprayed our very curious dog. Yes, that you know, small victories, Kay Kimmy. Just small victories at this point. And just finished washing clothes and has a wonderful podcast interview today. Otherwise, good and safe. That is excellent to hear. Yeah. So yeah, I been thinking a lot about characterization and language and hoping people stay safe in the next couple of weeks and wear their masks. Things are getting scary and I think we're all tired of being scared. And so even though it's worse than it's ever been, people are still like, let's open stuff. Come on. So, yeah, be careful. Phased out, you made a pun. You did. And that happened. Congratulations. Beth says, late to realizing this, but I love your drink mug. Does it say Billionaire's Tears? Yes, this was our Elizabeth Warren mug. Tish, it's scary to see. It's not just the U.S., but the whole world. Yeah, it is. I felt weird asking my editor for an extension last week, considering that they're British, and it's like I half expected them to go, come on, we worked through Brexit, you can deal with this. But they were very nice. So, tell me how you are handling things. Tell me whether it's characterization in your own books or just life right now, because it's so hard having all of this happen during a pandemic because we just need, you know, you need people right now. You need to feel safe, but you also need people, and you can't have it, or you shouldn't have it. A person who works with escape artist Premium Muhammad was posting on Twitter yesterday that she had like faux fur lined leggings on them with unicorns, and she said she's magical, and I'm like, I must know where you bought these, because they look like you're being hugged all the time, and I need a hug all the time right now, and my family says they have other things to do. Which I realize in retrospect sort of implied that my family didn't want to hug me at all, where I was trying to point out that they didn't have time to hug me all the time. But, I mean, even with people in the house, I'm feeling lonely. So I just want to reach out, and that's one thing I love about Twitch, is that we're able to do this, we're able to chat. And as Streamlabs just said, if you are lurking, that's cool too. I'm glad you're here. I wrap myself in fleece robes at night. Yeah, that's good, Anne. Oh my gosh, I miss the hugs. I'm such a big hugger. I hug my pillow, turn off the news, and sleep. That's a good plan. Yeah, I have a, it was years ago. At our comic book store, the hottest toy was these giant microbes, which I suppose, I don't know if they're making coronavirus now or if it's too soon. But, you know, like big stuffed animals of the cellular images of famous diseases. There's, you know, mad cow, and there's Giardia, and I can't think of them all. But I have a black death. Which is basically just looks like a kind of black sausage, slightly curved. And, I sleep with it like a 5-year-old. Cause it's just like a perfect size and shape to wrap around. And it amuses me because apparently the genetic condition I have, some theorize that it was brought about by people in Europe who survived the Black Death. They survived it because they had inflated iron in their systems, which created people with genetic abnormalities to retain too much iron in their systems, which, you know, then could kill you. But if the Black Plague comes again, I should be okay. But I just wanted to see how y'all are doing. Phased Out, who I'm forgiving for the pun, says, I have virtual people. My cat loves me. Chat with your fiance every single day. That's good. And you're getting married this summer, aren't you, Phased Out? K. Kimmy says, I'm really lucky to live with my family so I can still get hugs. Yes, me too. Tish says, my girls get so much hugs since it's just us. There's no way they can't feel the love from Mama. Yeah, exactly. I'm around my family too, says Anne, so when I see my nieces and nephews, I can give them little ones hugs whenever they'll let me. I also have virtual communities too. Virtual communities are important. I've got a Slack that I'm pretty close with. Underpope says, I have a few of those giant microbe plushies. I have a neuron from... Yes, the neuron's neat. They don't have only diseases. They also have like an amoeba and a neuron. It was the inspiration for more than one story. That's awesome. Virtual communities have helped me as well, says Cro-Mag. That's great. I'm very glad this has come up. I need to figure out why my computer is not charging, so talk amongst yourselves while I bend down and check on everything, because I don't know what's going on. It's all very annoying. Haha! It wasn't plugged in all the way. Okay. Sorry about that. I have cats. They don't give very good hugs. Yeah, but don't they sit on you and stuff? I hear people find that comforting. When I sit on the floor after my dogs are super excited from having me on the floor and I've decided to stop sniffing or licking me, they usually settle down, like, right next to me. And we don't sleep with... The dogs aren't allowed in the bedroom because we're technically allergic. I've gone through a series of shots, so I'm not as allergic to dogs anymore, but my husband still is. So we basically decided we could have dogs, but they can't stay in the bedroom. We need a allergen-free zone as much as possible. So no dogs in the bedroom, no dogs on the bed. So when we sit on the floor, they are just like magnetized, cuddling in close, which is nice. Phased out, not getting married this summer anymore. I'm sorry. Do you have a plan, a date? You don't have to tell me, but I sympathize with the holding off of the marriage. I'm sorry. So what are people working on? I want to hear what you're working on. I want to hear that you've got a plan. You know, we're moving away from the whole resolution thing, but it's still important to think, do you have a project? Do you have a project you want to start? I have a project that I worked on last year and then put on hold and is due soon, and I need to get back to it, and that's a novella project. Somebody was asking questions about novellas in the Discord yesterday, and it's a rough length because sometimes when short stories get too long, they get, you know, bogged down and they need to be cut. And sometimes when a more developed story gets written, if you cut it off too soon, then it'll be, well, cut off too soon. So it's a more difficult bullseye to hit, the 17,501 words to 60,000? 40,000? Anyway, it's that middle range, the 25 to 30,000 word stories that kind of hard to do because you've got to get your pacing right and you got to get your timing right. You got to make sure your story is bigger than a short story and not as big as a novel. That's why, again, Stephen King wrote some excellent novellas early in his career. The Long Walk has its problems, but I devour that thing every time I pick it up. Let's see, we got lots of people updating, thank you. Underpope says, yes, the cats do sit. Okay, good. K. Kimmy is thinking about starting crafting streaming on Twitch, if only to make myself accountable to actually doing the things. Yes, if you do that, let me know. I would love to watch. That's awesome. And finished chapter 5 of my supernatural romance suspense. That's great. Phased out. We are strategizing. Hotel will hold our current package to the end of April. That's really good. Hey, Todd, good to see you. Working on a piece of Warhammer fanfic right now. That's cool. I like it. Tish is writing the third draft of my cozy mystery series, want to self-publish. I would like to hear more of your cozy mystery series. I am a fan of cozy mysteries. This is a clean podcast, but I'm bringing it up because it is a thing that happened in the news. The Internet of Things has... Well, we already knew that it had stretched to sex toys, but apparently there's a male chastity belt with an app connected to it, which has been hacked. And somebody posted that this should be, you know, the Internet of Things, the porn Internet of Things on, should be used in a Midsummer Murders episode. So I had fun puzzling out that idea. Because Midsummer Murders are ridiculously complex. It's like, it's always some strange person is found dead. Suspicion falls on somebody who's affiliated with some neighborhood group, like the bell ringers or the pudding club at the school, or people who are coming to a high school, what's the word? Crap. Why can't I think of words today? Reunion. That's the word. But the group is angry because of a decision somebody else is making, which is almost always a red herring. It's absurd. One of my favorite Midsummer murders stories has to do with a grocery store surveyor is found murdered, and suspicion falls on the local upper class ladies prostitution club, who are angry about the big box grocery store coming into town. It's bizarre. Sario wants to work on semi-abandoned stories, and now people are responding to the chastity belt thing. How much crazier can the world get? Don't answer that, says Anne. I won't. Phased Out says, must not Google this. Underpope says, I have a short story which is rapidly expanding into a novella. Cro-Mag is trying to reevaluate a story concept that wasn't working, was a mystery, but now trying to scrub the mystery out of it. Now, I want to ask more about that, but I don't know if you can actually answer me in a detailed fashion that I would be satisfied with. Huh. Because there's... I would want to know why you'd want to scrub the mystery out of it, but maybe you have enough genres. I don't know. It's possible. But I hope whatever you're working on will get some words down this week. If you get a chance, if you're up at that time, I'm still intimidated by your timing, Tish, but I do want to drop in on one of your write-ins streams, because I love live write-ins, but it's just scary early. You can go see Tish. I put a link in the show notes of last Tuesday's episode, 552, I think. You can go see the link to Tish's YouTube page. Cro-Mag says, the mystery seemed to be distracting from the core idea. I see. You gotta do what you gotta do to your story. This sounds ridiculous, because a lot of my recent ideas, and by recent I mean like in the last 6-7 years, have started from something ridiculous and hopefully morphed into something more meaningful. Like, you know, my Blue's Clues meets 1984 story, working on that, and then there's the Murder, She Wrote meets Babylon 5 that sounds silly, but hopefully I put enough mystery into it to where it's not like, haha, you're making fun of Jessica Fletcher kind of thing. But I suddenly thought about a murder mystery based on Stardew Valley. Because it's like that cozy farm that you inherit, that's connected to a cozy little town with its own secrets. And, you know, it's not going to be like straight fanfic, but inspired by all the different personalities in Stardew Valley and all of the weird side plots going on, and I decided there's also murder. So I might be actually developing a non-speculative fiction murder mystery. We'll see. Yes, JMS did write for both of those shows. I keep forgetting that. That's a good point. But, yeah, I hope you guys get some words down this weekend. Remember what I said last week. Be kind to yourself. Turn off the thing if you need to. I unfortunately have not gotten the episode up yet. Last week's Ditch Diggers, but we do announce that we are recording. We're going to be doing Ditch Diggers live tomorrow here on Twitch. And I don't remember what time we said. Hang on, let me check. Message from Matt. Because I know he did message me today. Why do people keep calling me? Stop calling me. I'm busy today. Wait, what did he say? Tomorrow. Yes. Okay, it is tomorrow. Good. Good. And right. It is like at 3 o'clock tomorrow. 3 o'clock Eastern time. So, be doing live Ditch Diggers tomorrow. It will be like Ditch Diggers usually is. It will be where are my words today? I'm getting tired. I'm sorry. It will be explicit. Will not be clean like this one. And we'll be taking the audio from here and putting it in the feed like before. So if you're around, would love to see you. Because, you know, don't want to be all lonely and stuff. But yeah, if it goes well, then we're going to try to do it more often. Not every time, but more often. So that's my only short-term announcement. Thank you, Tish, for subscribing. And thank you, everybody, for checking in. I'm really hoping I can get my computer system settled and established to where I don't have to worry about, well, everything these days. There's just a lot. There's too much to worry about without worrying about switching computers and NVIDIA chips that decide to not show you what is any visuals. Whose channel will it be on? It'll be on mine. I believe Matt's on YouTube. I don't think he's on Twitch. So it'll be here at twitch.tv/mightymur. If he wants to host it on his channel, An Angry Writer, over on YouTube, that's his business, because I don't know how to do that. But, yeah, you could see the blog and show notes at murverse.com. You can email me at mightymur@gmail.com with questions for the show. I'm on Twitter at mightymur, Twitch at mightymur, YouTube and Instagram, not as often, but YouTube is Mur Lafferty, and Instagram is Mighty Mur 2. I don't remember what happened to the original Mighty Mur account. And, yeah, you can support the Patreon, patreon.com/mightymur, and get access to the Discord, and I'm going to be sending out information to the Patreon about the first Kick in the Pants workshop we're working on. And I guess that's it. I really hope that you guys stay safe, both in the realm of political unrest and in the realm of pandemic, and get some words down, because that lasts. And it's good self-care, because you should be writing. Remember, you can support the show at patreon.com/mightymur. I Should Be Writing theme music provided by John Anilio. You can find more about him at johnanilio.com. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license.
should be riding. I should be working on my bike.